Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
Welcome to this special edition of Private Club Radio. This is the National Club Association's National Club Conference Recap Show. This will be part one of two, part one of this show, because we were able to capture so many great moments from the conference, both speaking to some of the representatives of the National Club Association's board, as well as some of the speakers that presented at the conference. And it was a great conference up there in New York City. The festivities kicked off with an evening reception at the University Club of New York. And what a place that was, with their beautiful library, the largest of any private club in the world. Just gorgeous. And some of the antique volumes they have there were pretty incredible. But Eric Trump was the evening speaker, had a lot to say about the Trump Organization in terms of what they're doing within the private club industry, and it was a really great evening. The main sessions were held at the New York Athletic Club. There was a dinner at the Friars Club, which was a treat, and really just a special couple of days there up in New York City. So I'm hoping that you get a little taste of it on this episode and really get to see what happened and what went down. And if you missed it, I would certainly encourage you to register in advance for next year, which is going to be held in Los Angeles, which should also be a pretty fun time. I got a sneak peek from Henry Wallmeyer and from some of the staff at the NCA about some special treats that'll be happening there that I can't mention here on the show, but they are certainly must attend. You cannot miss that conference next year. So without further ado, I'm going to bring you our first interview. Just a quick little vignette with the chairman of the board of the National Club Association, Mr. Ted Benn. And Ted is a partner at Thompson & Knight Law Firm in Dallas, Texas. I caught up with him before the conference, and I wanted to ask him about Henry Wallmeyer, who's the president of the NCA. He's now in his second year as president, and what he's done for this conference. Here's what Ted had to say.
We wanted somebody who would be visible in the industry and could become a voice for the NCA. And I think that Henry has done a really good job with that. He's out there. He's being seen. He's dynamic. He's proactive. So we've been pleased with that. Yep. And, you know, and I think a lot of the credit for the conference goes to Henry and his insights and really working hard to do something a little bit different. We sort of listened to what the members, you know, wanted. And I don't think they wanted or needed necessarily just more educational type of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they get enough of that from different things. Yeah. And so this is a little bit different than, you know, we can learn. I mean, come as an association of people and come associate and be together, right?
Right. So, it's wonderful because it's so outside the box. It's different content than you're going to get at any of the other conferences out there.
Yeah. So we're pretty excited about it. And being in New York, I mean, what a place, you know, with the traditions of clubs and I know one thing that, you know, since I've been on the NCA board, and what I really enjoy is I enjoy going to these different clubs, and learning the character of that club. I mean, each one is unique and has something that makes it special. Mm-hmm. And each club has its own story as to, you know, who its people are and what it does. And so it's, to me, that's actually, a perk of being, you know, the chair or being on the board. So it's a lot of fun to do that.
While I had Ted on, I also had him give us a rundown of the major issues that are facing private clubs from a legislative perspective. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I think the peeling away some of the, and you've already seen it happen, but peeling away some of the regulations that are hard on small businesses, like the WOTUS rule, the Waters of the U.S. rule is going where the EPA essentially was trying to regulate every puddle or stream anywhere, so it would affect so that they would put Clean Water Protections Acts on little streams on your golf course that went nowhere. And that, you know, that is going away. I think that the, you know, the overtime, the DOJ overtime sort of, rules and stuff, those are going to get, pared back to manageable things. You know, the, ACA Affordable Care Act, that some of the stuff will be modified to make it easier on small businesses, things like the employer mandate and things like that. So I think we're seeing a lot of that, with the new administration and regime. And so, so clubs can really get back to just taking care of members and, you know, not be caught up in a lot of these kind of expensive kind of, you know, regulatory types of things.
Next up was another board member of the NCA. That's Kirk Reese, the executive vice president at Dennehy Club Thinking Partners. Here's my conversation with Kirk. Kirk, welcome to Private Club Radio.
Thank you very much, Gabe. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and we're this is the National Club Association conference show, and I want to talk to you about your involvement. You sit on the board of directors of the NCA. Can you tell us about some of the important issues that you and the board are working on right now?
Well, Gabe, thank you. Certainly, it's been a great year for us, both in terms of our support of things going on, initiatives really provided through the election process last year. Many of the things, as you know, that we support are really built on a small business platform. So obviously the election of President Trump was key to helping push a number of those things through. I know that you've spoken with Brad Steele, who does a lot of our advocacy work. Brad has been very active in the last several years as we've really stepped up our efforts there. We certainly are glad to see many things moving in the right direction, things like tax reform, which we believe benefits clubs by benefiting our members. Certainly, the more discretionary income that they have to spend, the better off that we'll be. We look forward to other things like the rollback of the National Labor Relations Board and many of their initiatives, particularly involving unionization. Those things have been very, very much key to our constituency, things that they'd like to see happen.
Absolutely. Now, does the board tackle some things with the membership as well? And apart from the political issues, I'm sure you guys have some plans for the association itself. Anything in the works that we should be knowing about?
Absolutely. Well, several things. You know, one was to really broaden our perspective, both you know, in the daily club governance area. We view our role with clubs to be both in helping their leadership, the volunteer leadership, really excel along with management, becoming aligned with management and focused on each individual club prospering. So to the extent that we support those efforts, we certainly publish many articles and a lot of, expertise on club governance. From the NCA's role, we have, you know, both with Cindy Vizza and our individual members, we've been focused on helping improve the club trends. Frank Vane, for example, you know, with McMahon Group, who is coming up to be our chairman, has been focused on with the McMahon Group publishing the trends and something that we support, allowing clubs to understand what's coming up in their future.
I love that magazine. I read it. It's quarterly magazine. It's wonderful. And it does. It covers all the trends that are happening in the industry. It's just a great publication. I think you had Jim Nance on the cover this time around, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's a member of Bel Air Country Club and a few other spots. He lives up in Pebble Beach. But it's great that we're featuring, I think, not necessarily celebrities, but people who really view clubs as a part of their life. And that's been a focus for us to really be more inclusive.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And you're doing that with the conference as well this year. So I know a lot of the speakers aren't necessarily the same speakers you'd see at other types of conferences. You're going outside of the private club industry and getting some real thought leaders. Can you tell me about some of those speakers that you're most interested in seeing?
Well, obviously, you know, Eric Trump would be a headliner there in terms of, you know, bringing someone in with, you know, a real direct line, quite frankly, to the Oval Office. I think that would probably generate the most interest in someone who is running the clubs, and you know, whether you view him as a lightning rod or President Trump as a lightning rod in our business, clearly he's the one person in government who has the closest alignment with the things that we do on a daily basis. And so we certainly are interested to hear about what he's doing. Certainly, George Bodenheimer with ESPN, we're excited that he's coming on board. And again, just alignment in terms of sports. And since most of our clubs have some type of a sporting activity, and certainly many view themselves as sportsmen, or many of our members view themselves as sportsmen, we're anxious to hear what he has to say in terms of the future of that.
Yeah. I'm anxious to hear it as well. Now, Dennehy Club Thinking Partners, you guys do consulting as well as executive search and placement. Tell us folks a little bit about how you guys help clubs, Kirk.
Well, Gabe, thank you. We've been around for a little while. Dan, actually, who's the principal of the firm, started the firm, actually had worked as a club manager for many years, and then had worked for John Sibbald. And if you've been around in our business a long time, you know John Sibbald is somewhat the grandfather of search in our business. And Dan worked for him for a number of years, and then eventually hung a shingle and created Dennehy Club Thinking Partners. And over the last 9 years, we've conducted over 600 searches, but we also do a significant amount of consulting projects. Many that involve taking basically a club from the ground up. Places like Shooting Star in Jackson Hole, Wyoming would be a case. Great Horse in Massachusetts would be another one. Mm-hmm. So we're very proud of the range of services we provide, and we think that we're really one of the few firms that both can handle executive recruitment and with the consultant's heart. So we think that arms us well for what we do in the marketplace. Help clubs find leaders.
Well, fantastic. Well, I definitely invite listeners to check out DennehyCTP.com. Kirk, thanks so much for coming on Private Club Radio and the National Club Association Recap Show. Really appreciate having you on here.
Gabe, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
So as you've heard there a couple of times now, the education sessions were really unique. And so I'm going to get into now some of those featured speakers from the conference. We're going to first start off with Bob Litwin. Bob is a motivational speaker. He is a Wall Street performance coach, and he is the world tennis champion for, I believe, 19 years running in his category. So a pretty impressive guy there. I caught up with Bob before the conference, and here was our conversation. Bob, welcome to Private Club Radio.
Thanks, Gabriel. Happy to be here. It's great.
Being that you're a Wall Street performance coach, I got to imagine that there are some strategies or lessons that anyone can take and put into effect in their own business or their own life. Can you tell me about some of those?
I believe that if you do a good job on your life, on the big things in your life and the medium things in your life, that of course all of the things that you do, whether it's work or tennis or relationships, those are going to be better because the skills that are required to be a really outstanding person, there's a vast number and it's wide. It's not that everybody's supposed to be compassionate, but that might be something that a lot of people can be better in their life with, which will make them better at a lot of things. So. Just as an example, on Wall Street, for example, we find that the business is very driven by one thing, and that's P&L, creating alpha, creating revenue for the investors. And there is not all that much other stuff that really is there that can make a particular analyst or trader, portfolio manager feel really great. If you're not putting up the numbers, then you're just not good. And even if you're putting up good numbers, you may not even be happy because you could have put up bigger numbers just by being earlier or later in a stock or bigger or smaller position. So what I've done is, being that I have somewhat limited knowledge, certainly much more limited knowledge in finance than the people that are in the business, I stay away from the specifics of the business. And what I do is I work on trying to help people develop characteristics that appear to be significant for high performers across every industry. So those things might include very simply, one of the great ones is how deep and enduring is somebody's focus. Mm-hmm. And we're in a world of multitasking. So I'll be training somebody in how to deepen focus. It's something that's trainable. It is a skill. People are born with focus and they slowly lose it as they become more affected by the world around them. Like babies have the greatest focus. They only know what they know in the moment.
I know. And we're all becoming so ADD.
We are. And, you know, the world that we live in, certainly with cell phones and iPads and CNN on 24/7. I mean, it's very challenging to have really great focus. But if you look at our highest performers, say in tennis or in investing, these are people that during the time that they're working, when they're doing their thing, there's very little mental wiggle going on.
Right.
And those that start having a wiggle, it's incredible how the margins are so small at the very top of every game. And we saw it with Tiger Woods when he had a mental wiggle because of the problems he had in terms of his family stuff.
Yep.
He couldn't hit the ball straight anymore. Like Novak Djokovic, similar thing, had some personal issues. The guy went from being dialed in day after day, match after match, to not being able to find his way right now.
Right.
So developing deeper focus is something that's definitely trainable. Some people call it meditation, but certainly in finance, I stay away from that word because mm-hmm. people get nervous about it. Yep. Even mindfulness is a little bit woo-woo for people. So mm-hmm. I don't call it that. I just call it like, How do you go into a quieter space in your mind? How do you close, you know, can you close your eyes and let all the noise be there and just watch the noise? And by watching the noise, all the conversation that's going on mentally, it tends to dissipate. And what you're left with is a moment of focus.
Yeah.
So there are ways to train that. And even if people start with one breath in a day, it's great. So there's mm-hmm. focus is certainly one thing. There are certain things that fall into the category that I would say are like spiritual qualities of, for example, acceptance. People are in this world where all kinds of things happen that they don't necessarily like or they wish they didn't happen. For club managers, I mean, what a challenge that here they are running a business, but the owners of the business are often the members.
Right.
And there are very, very different agendas. I worked at clubs for many years. I was a tennis pro. So I was a tennis director at these very, you know, well-known clubs on Long Island, and I was part of the management team. I was in charge of a department, and I was given a responsibility to run that department effectively. And then somebody would come along and say, like, I think we need to change those windscreens. They look a little old. And I'm like, well, we have a budget. So well, I guess we can put that in for next year. No, we need it now. So the challenge of multiple owners not necessarily being aligned with the managers is a big challenge for the management team that I used to experience a lot. So what can managers do? They can't fight it, but what they can do is they can accept. When you accept something, it doesn't necessarily mean you like it, but it also doesn't mean that you become passive.
Right.
But by going into a state of acceptance, you tend to be more solution oriented.
Sure.
There's less angst. There's less passive aggressive behavior or disagreement. There's more this idea of like, this is the situation that I'm in. It's kind of like being in traffic. Mm-hmm. If you don't accept that you're in traffic, you have a miserable time, you make bad decisions, you get off the road, you change lanes, you're yelling at your wife or your husband is in the car with you. I shouldn't have done this. But if you say, hey, I'm in traffic. Okay, I accept it. I don't like it. What can I do? Well, I think I'll just stay in this lane. That's a decision I'll make.
Yep.
Or maybe I'll make a phone call. Mm. Or maybe I'll listen to music. Or maybe I'll just talk to the person in the car with me. So there ends up being a solution through the state of acceptance versus resistance.
Yep.
Another is...
How do you train yourself? How do you train yourself to do that? How do you train yourself to build that acceptance in instead of reacting?
Really, you know, very, very good question. Almost everything that we want to be or do or act like comes from training. So there are opportunities, believe me, all day long to train in acceptance. And they can be very lightweight, just like a gym. You can start off with a 1 pound weight, which might be, oh, I accept the fact that they moved me to a different seat in the office.
Right.
They moved me over one. It's not a big deal. It's not like a huge thing. It's not like accepting that the market is so volatile and doesn't do what you want it to do. Or maybe you can accept the fact that your son or daughter who's 8 years old is not ready when you're ready to take them to school. It's not a life thing, but it's an opportunity to say, okay, I accept this. I don't like it. I can do something about it, but by accepting it, I'm not going to be dealing with it in a bad way in the present. And also, by accepting something of that size, we start to build the muscle up, so we end up going to a 2-pound week or a 5-pound week, where maybe some, you know, the president of the club walks into a manager's office and says, listen, we've decided right now we're replacing the head of maintenance, mm-hmm. and it's June 1st. Like, that's a bigger thing to accept, and to be able to deal with it for the manager is a big deal.
Right.
So if you start off at that level, you might deal with acceptance well or not. If you're fortunate, you will. But mm-hmm. if you've trained yourself day after day, moment after moment, look for things that you resist and just say, oh, okay. You can say, I accept this. I see this is what it is. This is the isness of the situation. And even saying that is a way of hitting up against your own resistance.
Yep.
So I'll tell you something. I've been in this business for 45 years, and there is no shortage of good tips. Like sure. to say, be more accepting. That's a great tip.
Mm-hmm.
So tips are useless unless you invest in them, practice them over and over and over again until they fold into your own personality.
I like the concept of just starting small. I think that's perfect. You know, just start with the small things.
Sure. So there are so many, like I say, characteristics, whether it's not being non-judging when you're a manager, to not judge the member, that they have a personal preference. I mean, when you judge somebody, you create a lot of anguish for yourself.
Right.
Even detaching from thinking you're right and they're wrong. Mm-hmm. So working on detachment, these are all things that are trainable. I believe that virtually everything is software. Virtually everything. Not our eye color, not our foot size, but you know, things like patience and respect and cooperation and forgiveness and understanding, these create better opportunities for better communication between two people that may have some opposing views.
Right.
And then that leads to, of course, you know, what Stephen Covey said many years ago in the 7 Habits, which is you keep talking till there's a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
And the win-win is not always 100% win, 100% win. It might be a 50-50 win for both sides, but then you can move forward and work together for the common goal of, in a club's case, running a great club that respects the employees, that respects the members, that does the best thing for those people, for the consumer who's the member, so that they have the best experience when they walk in
mm-hmm.
and spend time there.
Yep, well said.
So my talk is really going to be about what are the personal skills that people can develop and strengthen so that they can go to battle every day with the challenges that are there when you have owners that don't run the club but make the decisions, and the staff that are actually doing the day-to-day work but don't really get to make a lot of the decisions.
Right.
And to somehow break down that sort of conflicting relationship that oftentimes ends up costing managers jobs. Not often. I don't know how often. I don't know the statistics. But certainly in the department of like tennis at a golf club, the frequency of turnover is very high because the tennis director is doing what they think is right for an area that's not really even a profit center generally. And then because they didn't, I don't know, maybe arrange for enough flowers to be planted that satisfy the members, they're gone.
Right.
It's like, sorry, yeah. You're out of here. So, yeah. Which is not a good thing for the clubs either. I mean,
no.
Having people, you know, there for a long time, if they're good, is usually very good. A
yeah.
good thing.
It behooves any organization to have some stability, I think, for sure.
Stability and continuity, yeah, really yep. important.
Yep. So a lot of these concepts are in your new book, which you'll be signing at the conference. Can you tell folks about how they get their hands on a copy if they're not going to be attending?
It's available on Amazon, which is probably the best deal because they do discounts. And it's also available as an audio book. Also through Amazon or any of the online booksellers have it. and it's in all the major bookstores. And it's called How to Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. And it's filled with the concept of how to change and grow is very simple and straightforward in the first few chapters. And then there's loads of stories about people in different industries, examples of their stories that weren't working and how they shifted them to positive stories. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, new levels of success and satisfaction in their lives.
Right. Yep. Well, once again, that's Live the Best Story of Your Life. Definitely recommend that one. I'll be checking it out for sure. Bob, thank you so much for coming on this little segment of Private Club Radio. It's wonderful to have you and look forward to seeing you at the conference.
I look forward to seeing you too, Gabriel. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the time to talk.
I'm going to take you now to probably my favorite session of the conference. It was delivered by George Bodenheimer, who was the former president and executive chairman of ESPN. And he's the guy who really took them from a no-name cable network into becoming the behemoth giant that they are today. He started his presentation off by playing the first ever episode of ESPN, the first ever airing. And you would actually laugh if you saw this. I definitely recommend you go to YouTube and try to find that. You probably could search for ESPN's first ever show or something like that. It was hilarious. They covered some softball World Series or something. Really, really hilarious, but just an awesome story. He had the crowd laughing the whole time. And it was a really wonderful lesson on how you should never fret on the small beginnings of something because you'll never know what it could possibly turn into. Very inspiring. So here's my conversation with George before he gave his presentation. George, welcome to Private Club Radio.
Oh, thank you, Gabe. Pleasure to be with you.
And George is one of the featured speakers here at the National Club Association's National Club Conference. We're in the beautiful New York Athletic Club here in Midtown Manhattan. So George, first wanted to ask you about building a corporate culture, because that's something you really excelled at with ESPN. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I really credit the early founders of ESPN and the early executives with creating a culture that I believe is ESPN's strategic advantage. I'm not sure if it was our bucolic Connecticut location, our lunch pail work ethic, our sort of underdog status in the media business for a lot of years. I'm not sure what it was, but something in that combination built a culture that is based on risk-taking, integrity, family values, hard work, passion, really the things that have driven ESPN success over the last nearly 38 years.
Yeah. If there's a couple tips for people that want to maybe instill some of those values in their own team, what advice would you give them for them?
You know, for me, Gabe, I would be able to articulate what you want your culture to be. And then once you've done that, I wouldn't stick it in the bottom drawer of your desk and, you know, dust it off every 6 months. I think you got to talk about it and make sure the employees know that the senior management is bought in. You got to walk the walk. Your actions must align with what you say your culture is. But talk about it. Use it as something you talk about frequently with employees.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Now, leadership, of course, was a big part of your role there. Any advice for young leaders coming up the ranks here in terms of building that cohesive team?
Well, I certainly I advocate listening. I'm really a believer in the team approach to management. I do think that you get the most out of your employees and your team when you utilize them all and listen to everybody and give everybody a chance to cooperate. You know, I don't believe in just kind of the solo, you know, the solo leader, solo warrior kind of idea. You know, that can only get you so far. To me, the real power is taking advantage of the strength you have in diversity on your team.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you have a new book out. Can you tell folks about the book? And you're doing something special with the proceeds.
My book is Every Town is a Sports Town. It details the rise of ESPN and what I believe are the successful things, you know, behind mission, brand, and culture that drove and continues to drive the success of the company. Now that I've left the company, I'm spending most of my time raising money for the V Foundation for Cancer Research. In fact, all of my proceeds from the sale of this book are donated to the V Foundation for Cancer Research. And so I certainly appreciate the Club Association's support of my book today.
Absolutely. And you just told me you signed a couple hundred books up there. It's got to have some writer's cramp at this point.
Yes, we're off to a very fast start this morning, but I'm really excited to be here at the beautiful New York Athletic Club. I'm a member here as well, so I'm here at the club often. This is a dynamite club, and it does a lot of good things in the community. It's really a big part of New York City and the surrounding area.
So just a pleasure to speak with Mr. Bodenheimer there. Really enjoyed that conversation. I have more interviews to bring you, but I want to be mindful of your time here on Private Club Radio. I try to make these episodes just about the drive time that you have during your commute. So I try to keep them right around a half an hour. We're at that point. And so what we're going to do is pick this back up next week. We will bring you part two of the National Club Conference. We'll be speaking with Reese Jones, famed golf course architect. I've got Robert Cerecci, the general manager at Medina, who has done some incredible things. Rand Jarrus of the United States Golf Association and Kevin Kopanen of Members First will all be joining us next week on part two of this. Before I leave you today, I want to make sure that you check out nationalclub.org. the website of the National Club Association. Go over there and check out what the National Club Association is doing for its members, not only its members, but clubs like yours across the country, working on issues and fighting for you in Washington, D.C. A wonderful organization. And check out their next year's conference in Los Angeles. It's going to be a great time. See you back here next week. Until then, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by the Private Club Agency, the premier marketing and consulting firm dedicated to helping clubs increase and retain their membership. Visit privateclubagency.com to learn more.